Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. The Otomizora Tribe of Oklahoma and Connecticut's Department of Banking are in court. The tribe says they have the sovereign right to offer high-interest loans anywhere online. The state says their business is illegal and predatory. Is this a challenge to sovereignty, or is the state's opinion protecting consumers? What about when tribes offer online loans with upwards of 300% interest? Join us as we talk about tribal online lending right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A First Nations leader in British Columbia says there will be no approval for pipeline projects in the province until Aboriginal conditions are met. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, that means not until First Nations are consulted and satisfied that their land rights and the environment are protected.
Grand Chief Stuart Phillips says energy companies, along with the federal government in Ottawa, have ignored the rights of First Nations people and their concerns, especially when proposing natural resource projects. Phillips says First Nations have long held that they have the constitutional and legal right to defend the environmental integrity of their territories, and he says Aboriginal title and rights and everything they represent are not for sale. He says First Nations are not opposed to pipelines in theory, but...
Under the current lack of environmental standards, the Harper government did a very effective job of completely gutting all environmental regulatory oversight with omnibus legislation, and has certainly shown complete disregard for the environmental concerns and the natural values of British Columbia.
Grand Chief Phillip also had high praise for the recent move by the Lac Qualams First Nation to turn down a more than $1 billion deal that would have given consent for a liquefied natural gas project. An overwhelming number of the 3,700-member First Nation voted against the proposal because of environmental and cultural concerns. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Alaska's farthest north communities could better adjust to climate change if hunting and fishing rules become more flexible. That's according to the state's Arctic policy expert, who addressed the Native American Fish and Wildlife Society's convention recently in Juneau. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Craig Fleener is Alaska Governor Bill Walker's special assistant on Arctic policy. The Gwich'in Athabascan from the village of Fort Yukon says northern Native people had the ability to adapt before Western-style government took over.
1,000 years ago, if the caribou didn't come, you killed a moose. If the caribou that should have come to your community 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, 1 week ago, today, weren't there, well, you harvested them next week.
But most state and federal hunting and fishing rules only allow harvests of particular species at specific times. That's a problem for many indigenous people. It's worse in the Arctic, where warming is faster and more extreme than in other parts of the world. Fleener says northern residents are seeing changes in populations and migration routes caused by climate change. He says more regulations defining seasons and bag limits need to be adaptable.
We don't do it enough. It's very tough, especially with rigid management structures that we have, but I think that's something we really have to focus on.
Fleener urged tribal and other representatives at the Native American Fish and Wildlife Society convention to educate themselves about climate change and Arctic issues. For National Native News, I'm Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
The Hopi tribe is getting congressional support in an effort to stop an upcoming Paris auction, which the tribe says includes Native American objects. Tribal leaders and two U.S. Arizona representatives are set to discuss plans during a press conference Wednesday in Phoenix. The Hopi tribe is requesting federal agencies, including the U.S. Department of Justice and the FBI, take immediate action to halt the Eve Auction House event scheduled on June 1st. The Arizona tribe is also requesting the voluntary return of objects identified to be of Hopi origin to the tribe. This has been an ongoing battle by the tribe to stop the sale of Hopi sacred items from being sold at auctions and lost to private collectors. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is holding a field hearing in Anadarko, Oklahoma, Wednesday. Witnesses on the oversight hearing, Advancing Economic Success in Indian Country, includes business leaders in banking, construction, and technology. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. We've heard about the bad rap that high-interest short-term loans have. They're also called payday loans. And some of us have even heard about the chilling stories about the dangerous cycle of debt, where people end up paying thousands of dollars for a loan that started off 10% or lower of the debt owed to the lender. And payday lending is seen as predatory and has been banned in 15 states. Also, caps on interest rates have also been implemented by some states. Here is the Native angle. Vermont and Connecticut ban payday loans, but dozens of tribally owned online lending companies lend and collect freely in those states, as well as anywhere customers click on their websites. And that has two women in Vermont and the Department of Banking in Connecticut taking out-of-state tribes to court. They say these tribal businesses are unethical and shouldn't operate in their states. And tribes feel their sovereignty says otherwise. So with that, we ask you this. Should states have a say in how tribes exert their sovereign rights when operating these types of businesses? Join the conversation, 1-800-996-2848. Tell us what you think about payday loans. And joining us now from Durham, North Carolina, is Ellen Harnick, and she is a senior policy counsel for the Center for Responsible Lending. Welcome to Native America Calling, Ellen.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning.
And Ellen, it's our pleasure to have you on the line with us. And I mentioned the bad rap of payday loans. Can you expand a little further? You know, just what is this bad rap for folks who might not be familiar?
Sure. So payday loans, that's the name given to extremely high-cost loans that typically have an annual percentage rate of over 300%. And the problem with the loans is they're marketed to people who are struggling financially, who believe they're marketed as a way to help get through some sort of short-term crisis. But what ends up happening quickly is because the loans are so very expensive that if a person was short $300 in their monthly budget 1 month, they're going to find themselves not able to fill that $300 hole the next month. And now, in addition to the $300 hole, they have enormous interest and financing charges to pay on top of that. And so in communities that struggle financially, and these include communities all across America, people find that they are pushed from the financial edge over the cliff. And for this reason, as you said, roughly 20 states have either banned or severely restricted these loans, as have set up several Native American tribes. And the issue, I think, for consumer advocates and civil rights groups and those who care about people who are struggling is to ensure that when a state or a tribe says you cannot make these 300% loans in our communities, that lenders honor that, whether they're lenders affiliated with a tribe or not. Those lenders are free to lend where it's legal, but you need to respect the sovereignty of the tribe or the state that has said this is killing our community and we need it not to happen here.
All right. Thanks for that, Ellen. And again, our phone lines are open. If you would like to join the conversation, you can. Just give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. And, you know, we also want to know, what do you think when a state does push back and says that these type of lending businesses are not welcome in other states? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Do you see this as a threat to tribal sovereignty and e-commerce, or is this protecting the consumer? Again, you can give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. It's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And when we do talk about more tribes jumping on board with this business opportunity, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing for your community? Again, call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Share what's on your mind. And Ellen, when we say predatory, you know, what does that mean? Break that down for me.
So a predatory loan is different from the extension of credit that helps people move on in their lives. A predatory loan is a loan that's made without regard to a person's ability to afford the loan, and it's made with the hope and expectation that they're not going to get out of it easily, that they're going to get into this debt and find it very, very hard to get out of it. And so the reason that payday loans are widely considered predatory and are in fact illegal to make to members of the military, for example, is that these loans have the effect of taking a human being, a person, and turning that human being into effectively an annuity for someone else. And so they are predatory because they're not only desperately expensive, but they're made with the hope and expectation and result that these families end up paying and paying and paying and unable to get out. And that's the fundamental problem with these loans.
And Ellen, over the years, as these have, you know, started to pop up in different places, you know, have they changed their tactics? Have they gotten swifter, or, you know, or just the opposite?
Well, so in terms of the tactics, I mean, I should say that payday lenders have tried a variety of tactics to get out from under state law. So remember, state law protects the residents of the state. And so it only impacts businesses that come into the state, whether to open a storefront or to lend and try to enforce loans against residents of that state or that tribe. And payday lenders have tried a variety of efforts to get around those laws. So for a while, they were doing a scheme that was called a rent-the-bank scheme, where they would affiliate with a bank and say that it was the bank who was making the loan, and because banks have certain exemptions from state law, they were saying we don't have to comply with state law. And the banking regulators all put a stop to it, saying this is really an abuse of the banking charter and that banks should not be subjecting themselves to the reputation risk and to the impact on the community of becoming a mechanism for getting around state law. And so the payday lenders couldn't use banks anymore, and then they went to another model which had to do with trying to become credit repair organizations, and the states put a stop to that. And so so the payday lenders have now sought out tribes as sort of their latest way of getting around the state laws where the borrowers live. And I should make the point that tribal lenders are one subset of payday lenders, and it's not like tribal lending is any more terrible than the rest of payday lending. It's all devastatingly harmful, and that's why the Department of Defense says you cannot do this to members of the military, because so many of these families, moderate-income families in the military, were getting stuck in a cycle of debt, and it impacted their ability to get security clearance when they were getting ready to be deployed. And so the problems with these loans are pretty uniformly recognized. And, you know, the average borrower goes in thinking they're getting a loan for a quick fix, and they're going to end up with 10 loans in a year, because when the loan comes due and they don't have money to pay it, they're going to need to take out another loan.
And, you know, Ellen, we do have the opportunity today because we do reach many communities throughout Native America and just around the country. If you would like to share your experience and you're hearing what Ellen is offering to our conversation today, do you agree with her? Have you seen otherwise? Call us right now. We want to hear from you. Our phone lines are open, and the number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we did reach out to several of these companies that are tribal entities, the Cover Me Cash, the Cash Ferry, but our requests were not returned. Our requests to join us were not returned. By the start of the broadcast, we also did reach out to the Oto Missouri Tribe of Tribe and their entity Clear Creek Lending, but they declined the interview because of pending litigation. But if there are folks who are connected to one of these entities and you also want to take a stance on this, you can. Give us a call. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And if it just feels more comfortable to call in anonymously, you can. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to our first caller. We have Jennifer in Yankton, South Dakota, tuned in on KXSW. Jennifer, welcome to the hour.
Hi.
And what do you think about this, Jennifer?
My personal opinion is I've seen families being destroyed because of it. I feel that it rips families apart. It keeps people in that vicious cycle of the debt and the predators that I was just listening to the last speaker talk about. It's true. It does. They do prey on people who either don't have financial knowledge, which is sad, or can keep themselves above water, or trying to get to another level in their status, or trying to get out of a rut. They feel that these places may help them, but it really actually doesn't, and it does tear families apart. I really feel, honestly, that they should either do away with them across the nation, or they should put some really strong caps on them with the amount that they're allowed to lend, as well as the amount that is added on for interest. I just feel that it's just a killer. It really is.
All right, Jennifer, thank you for your call there in Yankton, South Dakota. Again, you can share your thoughts, too, by calling in 1-800-996-2848. And I'm glad Jennifer mentioned, you know, putting a cap on some of these loans. Do you think that putting a cap, you know, keeps people out of hot water when it comes to their finances? Call in, share your thoughts, 1-800-996-2848. With us today from Durham, North Carolina, is Ellen Harnick, and she is a senior policy counsel for the Center for Responsible Lending. And if you have a question for her, feel free to call in and ask, 1-800-996-2848. And I'd like to go ahead and welcome two more voices to the hour. Joining us from Clarence, New York, is Barry Brandon, and he is the managing director of FTI Consulting and the former executive director of the Native American Financial Services Association, and he is a member of the Muscogee Creek Nation of Oklahoma. Welcome to Native America Calling, Barry.
Great. Thank you.
And pleasure to have you on the line. And also joining us from Omaha, Nebraska, is Charles Trimble, and he is a past executive director of the National Congress of American Indians and a principal founder of the American Indian Press Association, which is now the Native American Journalists Association. And he is Oglala Lakota. Welcome back, Charles.
Oh, thank you.
And gentlemen, I'd like you to help provide a little bit of the tribal view on this. Ellen has done a great job of just letting us know what, you know, payday loans are, or payday lending, as some people call it, and how it might affect communities. But Barry, I'd like to go ahead and start with you. You know, how are tribes jumping into this? What can you share with us?
Yeah, it may be helpful to put a little context in terms of my tenure of with the Native American Financial Services Association, of which I still do consulting work for. But I was approached by a group of tribal leaders about 3-4 years ago, and they were tribes who were just starting to get into the online lending space. These tribal leaders had the foresight to understand and to know that, as we all know, that as tribes as we in Indian country move into commerce of any shape or form, whether it's the sale of tobacco or gaming, that there are going to be critics and there's going to be attacks with respect to the exercise of our sovereignty to engage in those types of industries. So with that in mind, they asked me to assist to create NAFSA, as the acronym, in order to create some stability and some standards with respect to NAFSA member tribes, in order to create a bar of legitimacy and compliance with respect to how to do this. And I say that because some of these tribal leaders knew that there were either individual Indians or tribal members and or other tribes that were engaged in the business who they wanted to distinguish themselves from. Most notably, the one that most folks hear about is the Western Sky Group. And again, that was not a tribally authorized operation. It was an individual Indian operating a business from a reservation under an LLC, a limited liability corporation, that was authorized by the state of South Dakota. Conversely, the NAFSA tribes, you can only be a member of NAFSA if you agree to do various things or be able to prove various things. One of which, the first one is which the tribe must have authorized through tribal law the creation of the entity. So it's clearly operating with pursuant to the sovereignty of the Indian tribe. You must also then adopt a model lending code that NAFSA has helped put together that was patterned on the lending code out of the state of Colorado, which has one of the most stringent consumer protection codes out there. Then you must also commit to adhering to the best standards practices of NAFSA. So that was the way we saw to distinguish what our tribes were doing from others who are not such good actors as the first speaker was describing, but to really distinguish ourselves.
And Barry, is any of these standards, are they published anywhere where somebody could just kind of, you know, see if they're one of these members and see what they're supposed to be living by?
Right. And I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first part of your comment.
Are any of these standards published anywhere?
Yes. Yes. You can go on to mynafsa.org. I believe we have the model lending code on there, as well as the best practices of the NAFSA organization.
Okay, thanks for that.
And we currently have about 20 members, and my guess is there's probably another 20 tribes out there that are engaged in lending. So again, I can't speak for those tribes. I only can speak for the ones that have agreed to adhere to the standards of NAFSA. But I think it's interesting to note that, you know, distinguishing, again, the exercise of tribal sovereignty through the exercise of, you know, creating laws and being governed by them. The final piece that I did mention is these tribes all have to have a regulatory body. So if the best analogy is for all the tribes out there that do gaming, it's the equivalent of having a tribal gaming ordinance, of having tribal gaming regulatory standards in place, as well as having a gaming commission that oversees the operation and regulates it. And that's essentially the model that we followed.
Thanks for that, Barry. And you've heard about court cases like the one in Connecticut. I'd like to get your thoughts on this. You know, what does Connecticut's response mean for, you know, like the tribe, the Otomizura, and other tribes with online lending businesses and, you know, pretty much deeming that they're predatory?
Right. Well, you know, as the previous speakers mentioned, the state is objecting because they said, you know, what the tribe is doing in our state is in violation of state law, and we don't allow those types of products to be delivered to our consumers. The tribe, on the other hand, is saying, look, and this is an unanswered legal question as to where the transaction is actually taking place. The tribe is saying, look, we're exporting from our reservation, and we believe that tribal law should apply, and we're following tribal law, and we believe that's the law that should control the transaction. I can tell you that the approach that the tribes, at least that are NAFSA member tribes, have taken is we have gone to many of the states and said, look, you know, there's litigation and or there's regulation, and as a tribal government, we have a regulatory body that shares the same interests as you, which is consumer protection. So instead of litigating, why don't we look for mutually acceptable ground to co-regulate these products? And we've gained a considerable amount of traction on that idea, particularly in the state of California. But other states have basically shunned the tribes and said, no, you know, we would prefer to litigate over to sit down and talk out about what our real issues are with respect to, you know, consumer protection.
And so, Barry, do some of these cases challenge, you know, other tribe sovereignty?
Well, you know, there's always this fear in Indian country that any time that you stand up for your right, that you're putting everyone else at risk. But my view and the view I know of our leadership is that sovereignty is useless unless you actually exercise it. So if we're not willing to stand up and to actually fight for what we believe to be our inherent sovereign right to engage in commerce and to look at Congress as the one who ultimately has the say, which is highly supported by case law, then, you know, if we give up before ever engaging in a fight, then why have sovereignty? You're just basically letting the states tell you what you can and can't do.
And we've heard, you know, on the program, as we've talked about relationships with states, that, you know, tribes have a really big problem with states, you know, telling them what to do. Today's conversation, we are talking about lending practices. Some people call them payday loans. Right now, some tribes are being challenged, including the Oto Missouri tribe, and states are charging that tribes don't have the right to have some of these businesses happening in their own state. Some of the states have banned them. So when it boils down to it, what do you think? You know, do you think tribes should be allowed to have payday lending in states where it's banned? That's a key issue in why people in states like Vermont are having an issue with some of these businesses. We want you to share with us today. Our phone lines are open. And again, if you have questions about this, you can also call in and ask. We got some folks on the line who know this stuff. And if there is a case that you had questions about when it came to maybe you signed up for a payday loan and you found yourself in a situation, you can also give us a call. We want to know, you know, what are your questions when it does come to payday loans? 1-800-996-2848 is our number. And you can call in, share your thoughts, or ask your questions. You can also find us on Facebook. We are taking a look there. Or if you're a Twitter bird, go ahead and send us a tweet. Our handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if you've ever taken out a payday loan, you know, what was your experience? Would you do it again? 1-800-996-2848 is our number. We do want to hear from you. And it's important that, you know, you give your opinion too. All opinions are welcome. And again, if you would like to call in anonymously, you can. All you have to do is give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. It's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if you say no payday loans, what are the alternatives? Is there a better way to do this? You can call too if you got some good money advice. 1-800-996-2848 is our number. And with us today, we have Ellen Harnick, and she is a senior policy counsel for the Center for Responsible Lending. And if you got questions for her too, please do call in. Our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you, Native America. We're going to take a quick break to hear about what's coming up tomorrow. This month, we take a trip to northern Minnesota through the pages of Linda Lagarde Grover's new novel, The Road Back to Sweetgrass. The present is linked to the past as the story follows the lives of several Native Americans who find out what they're really made of. We hope you can join us for our May Book of the Month on the next Native America Calling.
I'm Nathan. My job gave me a lot. It gave me an income to support my family. It gave me purpose and pride. But the secondhand smoke there triggered my severe asthma attacks, infections, and lung damage. And I never smoked. It was so bad that my doctor told me I shouldn't work there anymore. I had to quit my job. But the damage was done. Now I'm so sick, I can't do much of anything I used to love to do. I don't referee youth basketball anymore. I don't run or lift weights. It's too much for my body to take. Instead, I'm taking breathing treatments or oxygen. I guess you could say my job gave me a lot. So let me give you a tip. Don't let people tell you that working around secondhand smoke is safe.
Smoking affects more than just your health. If you or someone you know wants free help to quit smoking, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. And in the news recently, the Otomizura Tribe of Oklahoma is in ongoing litigation with Connecticut's Department of Banking. And the department says the tribe has no business offering high-interest, short-term loans to people in their state, since the state has banned such loans, which are sometimes called payday loans. And the tribe says they have every sovereign right as a federally recognized tribe to operate in any state. And this is raising concerns. The state is pushing back and online lending. Some people are saying it is being put on trial and that tribal sovereignty and e-commerce is at risk. Do you agree or do you feel opposite? 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATED if you'd like to join our conversation today. And with us today, we have Barry Brandon with us. He's the managing director of FTI Consulting and the former executive director of the Native American Financial Services Association. Also with us, we have Ellen Harnick, Senior Policy Counsel for the Center for Responsible Lending. And we have Charles Trimble with us, a Native journalist and also past executive director of the National Congress of American Indians. And he comes to us from the Oglala Lakota Nation. I'd like to go ahead and welcome everybody back. And Charles, I want to get you in here. Where do you stand when it comes to this type of lending?
I, early on, 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was, wrote a column, as I do quite often, periodically. And this was very hard on the issue of tribes getting into this kind of lending. And at that time, I think the issue was some pretty scruffy people that had gotten into, gotten into some tribes to more or less get them to front for pretty bad businesses. But from what I hear of Barry describing, it sounds like they're well on their way of taking care of that. My big issue is tribes as governments have to get along with other governments as well. And I served in the National Congress of American Indians in 1976, when the year that we had a huge, what we called a white backlash, where many of the states, western states particularly, had felt that they got the short end of the stick and land returned to the tribes and various other good things. They were resentful of the tribes and really organized across the West to get the states to start pushing Congress to do do their dirty work. And what we saw was I think it was 11 pieces of legislation in the I think it was the 95th Congress that called for everything from just getting rid of the treaties and severing the trust relationship between the federal government and the tribes, a thing called termination, and, abandoning all the fishing rights and water rights and land rights that the tribe had, and all of this kind of stuff. And it was a scary and thing. It took a lot of effort and a lot of attention that could have been used elsewhere.
Sure. And Charles, you know, it also set the pace for, you know, I think how some relations are done today, the way tribes relate to the state. Not too long ago, we were hearing about Maine tribes and challenges they had with state relations. Charles, I wanted to ask you, you know, you use the term sovereignty for rent in your article. That's a pretty bold statement. Do you feel these type of lendings are putting sovereignty for rent?
No, I warned against that. You know, that it can't even appear to be that way. And I use the worst term, pimping sovereignty, you know, where you, if you have it out there to where somebody can buy it for a short period of time or whatever, then that's pimping sovereignty. But like I say, if what Barry says they're doing, that sounds very promising, and maybe that isn't the case. But again, even... I maintain that sovereignty really needs to be presented in context, and I understand sovereignty and the right of tribes to exercise their sovereignty, and I do understand the poverty and powerlessness that tribes have endured, you know, over many centuries, and I understand that now that they are empowered. They are empowered to use their powers and immunities. They try by any means possible to make up for much time lost in poverty. And if they want to use their powers and immunities in pursuit of money or reckless pursuit of money, it is the tribe's business, and no outside interest can tell them what not to do.
All right, Charles. I got a caller I want to go to. I want to bring in David, who is on the Mandan Hidatsa Nation in North Dakota. He is connecting to us on KMHA. David, what would you like to add?
I agree with a lot of what he's saying. I don't think it's necessarily a bad deal that they want to get into these businesses, as long as they treat them right. And the people that come to them for loans, people need to be educated that these loans are extremely predatory. They're not so much there to help you. They're there to make money for themselves. And a lot of times I think, you know, people get hooked on it, and that's when it becomes a real problem. I mean, if you just happen to need an emergency loan, you can't always go to the bank and, you know, have stellar credit and be able to make a loan. Suppose, you know, a relative passed away a couple states away and you need some money to, you know, go and pay your respects and to help the family out, that kind of thing, it might be okay, you know. But when people start abusing it, you know, it's just like drugs. Drugs can help you if you're sick. But if you're not and you continue to abuse it, you know, those drugs are going to hurt you. And it's the same with these loans. They're going to take advantage of you. They're going to, you know, and you're going to put a lot of people in some very bad situations, or people put themselves in them situations, I should say.
All right, David, thank you for your call, sharing your thoughts there in North Dakota. Let's go ahead and hear from another caller. We have Margie in Taos, New Mexico. She is tuned in to KUNM. Margie, welcome to the hour.
Hi. I go into a business that is, he is a business, and he was telling me that he had a good credit and a bank account forever, and when he went to buy the business, they wouldn't get him a loan. So he had no choice to except get it. But because he had a business, he could pay it off. He was talking about 30%. So he paid it off. He makes double payments to get it off early. And so it works for him. It wouldn't work for me. But some people, the banks are real stingy as far as giving out loans.
All right. Thank you for your call, Margie. And again, if you'd like to join us and share your thoughts on online lending, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd also like to hear from folks who have a tribe connected to one of these entities. Do you feel that anything positive is coming from them? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Ellen, I wanted to toss this back to you. We had two callers talking about, you know, when you do reach out for one of these type of loans. Any advice for either of our callers? Ellen?
Sure. Well, so first of all, the second caller made the point about someone who got a very expensive 30% annual percentage rate loan. And it's true, those are incredibly expensive. But they are available, and those are vastly better than the 300, 400, 700% annual interest rate loans that payday lenders, including the members of Mr. Brandon's organization, are offering. And the one thing I would say, if I could just respond, in terms of sovereignty, it is unquestioned. Tribal sovereignty is sacrosanct. And I think there's a little bit of a false question of sovereignty or consumer protection. Every state and nation, tribal nation, is sovereign, and they need to just respect each other when they go into each other's borders. So if a NAFSA member wants to make a loan above 24% per year to somebody in the Blackfeet Nation, well, that's not respecting the Blackfeet sovereignty, their ability to protect their own people from loans above their cap, which is 24%. So I would say if somebody gets themselves trapped in one of these loans, if the first caller talked about how it could help, but it's often predatory, the statistics show that most of the time people get trapped in these loans. 91% of the loans that are made end up going to people who get at least 5 loans a year. So if you got in and got out on one time, you are the rare exception. If you're like most everybody else, a few things you can do. The first thing is, if you live someplace where the loan is illegal, you should contact the Attorney General in that state. It may be that that loan is not enforceable in your state. It may not be enforceable against you if it's illegal in the state or tribe where you live. Second, you can go to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau website, which is consumerfinance.gov, and go to their complaint section, and you can at least make a complaint. Don't let that be all you do, but you may be able to get some help. And then another thing that people can do is go to, there are credit unions and native community development financial institutions. These are absolutely fantastic organizations. They are doing such amazing work in extending credit to people who need credit in native communities. It is unfortunate that some of these, they call them native CDFIs, community development financial institutions, they do have to use some of their limited resources to help people get out of payday loans. It would be much better if they could use those resources to help people start businesses and so forth. But those resources are available if you happen to have access to one of those organizations. And I would urge people to go online and look at, you know, the native CDFI network and see if there are organizations that may be able to help them.
All right, Ellen, I want to go to Barry for a response. Barry, anything you'd like to add?
Sure. you know, interestingly, the statistics show that either the unbanked or underbanked represent, it depends on the statistic, but somewhere between 20 and 40 million people in the United States, which goes to the point of it's very difficult for them to get credit. In fact, the CFPB issued a press release just 2 weeks ago that says 26 million consumers are credit invisible. These are people with no credit histories. These are people who would be considered incredibly high risk. These are people who cannot go to a bank to get a loan. The reason why it's these businesses, and we don't call ourselves payday lenders because none of ours are tied to a paycheck. They're all short-term installment loans. But this is an option for them. This is where they go in order to get money. So if you're someone who's loaning money and it's an unsecured loan, these people put up nothing. It's totally unsecured. They either have no credit. For our lending, you have to show a job and a bank account. So that's one of the first criteria you have to have. So we know exactly what the risks are with respect to loaning this money. But there's still a very, very high risk. Now, the other thing to remember about these astronomical interest rates are these are short-term loans. So you can get numbers like that if you extrapolate what is an annual percentage rate. But if the loan's due in 3 months, the amount of money you've paid over time looks astronomical. And this is one thing that we always say, do the math on a $35 overdraft charge from a bank when you bounce a check. You write a check for $1 over, the check bounce, they're going to charge you $35. The APR on that, which the banks are allowed to get away with, is well into the thousands of percents. So a lot of this is somewhat misleading, but it obviously goes to the anti-arguments. But needless to say, it's expensive money, but these are also very high risk, of which I believe the stats show that I think it's 30% of these default. So that means people don't pay them back. That adds to the risk factors. So this is all expensive money because, again, these are high-risk loans. So, I mean, that's what people need to understand with respect to this. And as someone said, where else do you go to get this? You eliminate these short-term lenders. Where will these people go?
All right. Thank
you,
Barry.
I don't know where they'll go. They'll go to the corner and ask somebody to loan them money. So there's certainly a product here that is in desperate need that tribes did not create, but tribes are certainly trying to fill the void with respect to the need. And as I described with respect to, the protections that we're putting in place are trying to do so responsibly. And I agree with Charles with respect to the sovereignty comments, and that's why we've recommended that our members look for government-to-government relationships with states in terms of addressing regulatory concerns as opposed to, litigation, because that is the exercise of sovereignty, sitting down with another sovereign entity and working through the issues and understanding what the concerns are. With respect to specific stories, on the MyNAFSA.org website, we have two or three videos of the tribes, including the Otoe, Missouri tribe, where they explain, their process for getting involved in the business and what they're using the money for, which is, again, just as we saw with gaming, this is not money that's going to enrich a single person. It's 100% put back into the government budget, and it's funding essential services for these tribes. But you can hear the tribal leaders talk firsthand about how they're using funds from these businesses to assist their tribes.
All right, Barry, and we'll get a link up to that on our website, too, after the program. If you're interested in checking that out, go to our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. Let's take another call. We have Karma, who is in Anith, Utah. Welcome to the hour, Karma.
Hello.
Hello, Karma. What's been your experience?
I really am was looking at this from the prospect of from the aspect of how states or uninformed states and federal regulators limiting the products available to consumers. And I think the last speaker also touched a little bit about how some of the tribes are actually using some of these the revenues that are coming from these entities. I think that uninformed regulators severely undercut on-reservation economic development, and again, back to the idea of tribal sovereignty. It's not new, but it seems like we're always under attack or directly attacking tribal economic development prospects. And particularly, I think this extends beyond just online lending, but in the context of electronic commerce, e-commerce opportunities. So I think it's beyond overreaching beyond just that particular part of e-commerce. Again, we're looking at a market that is underserved or underbanked consumers that traditional lenders are not really tapping into. So he also touched about, this is a market that is not net and that is available to be tapped into. And then in terms of what are tribes doing to use some of the fundings that are from their online lending companies, it's really for employment, creating jobs on tribal land. These entities are located on tribal land, and therefore they are, able to use that tribal sovereignty aspect. And so they're using it to support creating new tribal housing. There's one tribe that actually was able to create, 19 new homes that they're able to have members purchase at a discounted price as opposed to renting off the reservation. So they're really trying to use it from the aspect of economic development. And then again, we're looking at education. They're doing additional classrooms, books, teachers for Head Start, and then tribal services, employment training, development, financial assistance in terms of heating or burial services, utility and health care, wellness coverage, those types of things that are really beneficial to the members, and also just these different type of programs. I mean, they're taking these funds and putting it into 100% back into tribal programs.
So Karma, you're seeing positive things coming from this. I do appreciate your call there in Anith, Utah. And Charles, I also wanted to just kind of ask you the question too. You're a veteran journalist who has covered Native America for quite some time. What about putting some of this on the folks who actually reach out and get these loans? Are we also not considering, you know, their role in all of this?
Considering the what?
Their role in all of this?
Oh,
should some of this be put on the people who are going for the loans?
We would take upon ourselves.
Okay. Barry, same question to you.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this goes to disclosures and part of the consumer protection aspects of when you go, one, to the predatory issue, these are online products. So these customers are coming to us. They with the click of a button, they have a multitude of options as to where they can go and get their money or apply for money. And what we require is a truth in lending statement on the very first page, which shows this is how much you're taking out, this is what the fees are, this is how much you will pay at the end of your loan, just like any other loan. So we follow federal law with respect to those requirements. So, yes, I mean, at some point, you know, it's great that the government wants to help, but at some point, this is the responsibility of a borrower to sit down and to understand exactly how much they're going to have to, you know, to pay. And so there is certainly consumer responsibility as well.
All right. Thanks for that. And Ellen, you know, we've talked about, you know, a responsible side to this, too. Any advice for folks who feel that, you know, some of these entities are not, you know, working in a good way? You know, what rights do people have?
So I would say that if you're living in a tribal community or in a state where these loans are illegal, you should certainly go to law enforcement in either at the tribal level or at the state level. And, you know, I think we should be clear that while, you know, that all of these loans are, even if they're made with truth in lending statements, they have all of the problems that we've seen consumers suffer from consistently. And so much of the demand for these loans is generated by the need to repay the prior loan itself. So I think if you are like the majority of if you are in a loan that's like the majority of these loans, which are just part of the cycle of debt, I think a first step is to contact law enforcement where you live and see, by law enforcement, I mean the Attorney General's office, and see if it's even legal. And then I think a next step is probably checking with legal aid and, as I say, going to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But you should get help, because often what happens with these loans is not only are you paying the extremely high annual percentage rate on the loan, but then you are much more likely to start overdrawing on your bank account, because these online loans, they're the first ones paid when your paycheck or your Social Security check hits your bank account. And so these loans tend to make people much more likely to end up with overdraft charges, which, as Mr. Brandon noted, can be quite expensive as well, although not as bad as being in a cycle of payday, but you end up, unfortunately, incurring both. And I guess the other thing is get help quickly, because people who get payday loans are more likely than people denied payday loans to file for bankruptcy. So if you are so bad off that you're denied a payday loan, you are less likely to end up in bankruptcy than if you're somebody who got one. So I would say get help sooner than later, and credit counselors are available as well to help you figure out how to deal with these loans. If I may just add one more point on the sovereignty issue, you know, there are offshore foreign entities that try to make these loans. And, you know, if you're located in a foreign country and making loans that are illegal in the state where you're making them to, that lender is going to be subject to the rules of the state where the people live who they're lending to. So whether you're a foreign nation or a domestic nation or a private business, you do, it's consistent, I think, with being a sovereign to say you have to have a government-to-government relationship with the governments, the sovereigns whose people you're interacting with.
All right. And Ellen, we are getting close to the end. While we're at the end of the hour, is there a place where you can direct folks to if they have more questions?
Well, you can find a lot of information and research on payday loans at our website, which is www.responsiblelending.org.
All right. Thank you for that. And that's going to wrap it up for today. Thanks to our guests, Charles Trimble, Ellen Harnick, and also Barry Brandon. And again, you can visit our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. If you wanted to revisit this program, we do archive all of our programs on our website. You can check us out. And tomorrow we are going to open our circle once again to our Book of the Month. So if you are needing some summer reading, you want to tune in. Thanks to our crew here, our interim executive producer, Tristan Autome, our senior producer, Monica Brain, our associate producer, Andy Murphy, and Stephen Emmons, our engineer. Also thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. Thank you for tuning in today. Again, visit us online, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And if you have any ideas for shows coming up, go ahead, reach out to us, send us an email, comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com.
This program supported by the Peace Corps, the government agency sending thousands of volunteers to live and work alongside people in more than 60 countries worldwide. The Peace Corps will allow you to share your unique cultural heritage and promote world peace and friendship. We have rewarding work opportunities around the world in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. It will change your life and the lives of others. More information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov.
Tommy Takipiki. With Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, you can get low or no-cost health coverage for yourself and your kids. Get checkups, dental and vision care, and more. Apply now. Contact your local Indian health provider. Visit insurekids.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. 1-877-KIDS-NOW.
A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.